This is City Lights on WABE. I'm Lois Wrights. It's great to be with you. During Freedom Summer 1961, civil rights activists bussed down to southern states to challenge segregation. It wasn't an easy decision for everyone, and there were many who chose to stay behind. Jeray Brion Holder's play, Too Heavy for Your Pocket, takes a look at that conflict. Holder is the winner of the Alliance Theater's Candida Award, which puts the work of graduate student playwrights on the Alliance stage. He and the show's director, Margot Bordelon, sat down with producer Mike Johns to talk about the history behind the play and Holder's ties to Atlanta.
Too Heavy for Your Pocket is about a young man who is made to choose between attending school and becoming a freedom rider. Jeray, could you introduce us to Bozy and tell us a little bit about the story that's going on here?
Absolutely. So Bozy Brandon is this 20-year-old guy who is from the countryest part of Nashville you can imagine. And he's a part of this best friend foursome, and he is the smart one, and he gets a scholarship to Fisk University, which is really impressive for his neighborhood. And so he has to do summer courses, and that very summer is when Freedom Summer occurs, 1961. And so while he's excited about school, the rest of his classmates are gearing up for a revolution.
You're a native of Tennessee, is that mm-hmm. correct? And this is a story that's inspired in part by your own family history, is that correct?
For the most part, yeah. I'm from Memphis, but I spent all of my summers and holidays in Nashville, where all of my family's from. So it always had this kind of mythological space for me. And Nashville, of course, has an incredibly rich history. And once, mainstream Hollywood was really re-engaging the civil rights narrative with Selma and The Butler and those kind of films, I was talking to my own grandmother about her experiences with it because she was alive in the 60s. And she said once, yeah, I knew one of those freedom riders. He threw his education away to hop on a bus. And it was fascinating to me because that's not how we remember that at all. And I just dug deep into that and into what her experience of 1961 was like, whereas what we remember of 1961 is something really different.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about the myth that everybody remembers, like the big picture telling of history versus the on the ground, you know, contemporary view of of it? Can you talk about that change in attitude over years?
You know, it's wild because we have this understanding. We kind of have three layers going on, right? We have what the leaders of the civil rights movement wanted everyone to think, right? They had this very specific way that they wanted to be presented in the news and for the press, for everyone. And then you kind of had what was really going on, which was these educated members of the church were calculating on the ground and with the president. And then we have what we remember, which is Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, and that's kind of it. And so for me, it was really important to continue to dig into that story as we are kind of on the brink of another revolution potentially to see what the true facts about that were. And it wasn't just Martin Luther King had a dream, but there were a lot of other layers going on. It was important for me to dig into those.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, speaking of that, like John Lewis has been very prominent in the news lately. There is obviously still a struggle for civil rights and for racial equality going on in this country. As you were looking back at that history, as you were writing the play, did contemporary news stories, what was happening in the world, shape the work at all? And Margot, what were those conversations like in rehearsal?
In the writing of it, I was mostly interested in the Black Lives Matter movement. That was the predominant thing in the front of my mind. I was at Yale at the same time that protests were happening in Ferguson and people in their own neighborhoods were being gunned with rubber bullets and hosed down, actually. And I was at Yale University, and it was really hard for me. And then the election happened, and then the political climate kind of throbbed in a really different way, and that was a big part of our process once once the Alliance said, yes, we'll do this play, is what does this play mean for February 2017?
Yeah, the play really got reframed in a way because of the election of Trump. And we very much in the rehearsal process discussed the resonance of this piece right now. And I think it's been a real galvanizing force for the ensemble, for the company of artists, not just actors, but designers too, to be telling this story right now because it feels ever more relevant. And in a way that feels unfortunate. It feels like it's history repeating itself once again. It's fascinating to be working on a period piece that is very much written to be seen through a contemporary lens.
Can you tell me a little bit more about where the story goes?
So there's four characters. I kind of mentioned that it's about a foursome of friends, yeah. Right? And so while Bozy is grappling with this decision, his wife is dealing with the repercussions of having a husband who is potentially risking his life. And then his best friend and then his child, his two best friends, the other couple, are also grappling with what it means to be looking at their own world through new eyes. And so over the course of the play, the four characters all have, I guess, their own kind of political...
social awakenings. This foursome in the play, the way that we've talked about it in rehearsal, is they are such a balanced ecosystem that once Bozy leaves, the whole ecosystem is thrown into a kind of imbalance. Mm-hmm. So loyalties are tested and secrets abound.
There you go. Yeah.
Like any good drama.
I can't shake the thing that you were mentioning earlier about looking back at history and sort of peeling back the layers of, mm-hmm. like, you know, the story that we tell versus what was actually happening on the ground. Knowing that about the past, how does that color the way that you see what is happening now?
It's an ongoing process for me. If you would have asked me even 1 week ago that my America would look like this, I wouldn't have been able to guess this. So every day I wake up and I'm having to think about it in new ways. And so actually over the course of the play, I've been thinking, or this process, putting the play up, I've been thinking about origin stories and what our own cultural origin stories are. And I think for the civil rights movement, the people participating in that, that slavery really was an origin story for them. How did their ancestors survive that? And they had to think about all the different ways. And I feel as a Black millennial that the civil rights movement is my origin story, that that's actually the fabric that I'm made of. And so I am interested in the illiterate man who just participated in the boycott, as well as the guy who was a first generation college student, as well as Dr. Martin Luther King or John Lewis, who went on to become incredible figures of the movement. I think hopefully I can learn from all of those people and figure out what that means for me as an individual who is one of many.
I think that this play on a really macro level does suggest that progress is possible, but that it doesn't romanticize progress, that progress demands sacrifice and bravery and courage and heartbreak. And that is the painful thing that we're grappling with right now. Looking at revolution in the past feels romantic. It's what we were talking about earlier. There's a kind of glorification now of the civil rights movement. Now being in the center of this, what feels like what could be an impending revolution, it feels much less romantic. It feels urgent and necessary and terrifying.
Can you talk about what this play might have to say about how we participate in what could become a revolution?
So when my grandmother said, I knew that guy, he threw his education away to hop on a bus. It was also a complicated moment because he's the hero of the story, not my grandmother. But my grandmother's the hero of my story, that she raised five kids, and one of them went on to be a college graduate and went on to be the first Black chair of a program, and had me, who ended up going to an Ivy League program, that that my grandmother was a hero and is a hero, and it challenged me to find value in that moment for what she was doing. And I think that that's what I'm really excited that this play might do, is that it doesn't like wag a finger at someone who decides not to go out into the street, or it doesn't wag a finger at those who aren't calling their senators. Instead, it says, this is what other kinds of people decided to do during the civil rights movement. What might you be doing with your body? What might you be doing with your energy and time? And I think it invites everyone to think about themselves in the context of a movement, and rather than just heralding the freedom rider or heralding the homemaker.
If you're just joining us, this is City Lights on WABE Atlanta. I'm Lois Reitzes. We're listening to a conversation with Jere Holder and Margot Bordelon, the playwright and director of Too Heavy for Your Pocket. That show is having its world premiere at the Alliance now through the Candida Award, which celebrates the work of graduate student playwrights. The two spoke with producer Mike Johns.
Jere, there's a significance to you being a Morehouse alumni. You've got deep ties to Atlanta. You were a Kenny Leon Fellow at the Alliance previously. You're the first Candida winner to hold the distinction of already having been in the Alliance family. Can you talk about what this means to you as a writer and as an Atlantan, even an adopted Atlantan, as most of us are?
As most of us are, exactly. Yeah. You know, I have always been a firm believer that what makes theater special is that it's an ensemble of artists in a room with an ensemble of audience members, and that it is the closest thing our jaded generation has to church, right? Like, actually, it is a communal activity. And obviously, you have your big commercial theaters. You have Hamilton, which you can feel connected to even if you're just listening to it on Spotify. But it's important for me as a writer to return to a city that means a lot to me and say, hey, this is what I learned. These are the things that I'm thinking about. What are you thinking about? And how do you feel about this? And let's sit in this room together and have a dialogue about it. And so far, it's been a tremendous dialogue, and there's been a tremendous appreciation for having this dialogue take place at the Alliance Theater. At a time where I think we all really do want to talk to each other and want to talk about these things. And I just couldn't ask for a more fortunate set of circumstances to have my first professional production.
Yeah. Margot, you tend to, you came in from New York, you've been in Atlanta for a month. You tend to direct a lot of new work. You've directed at Steppenwolf, at Yale Repertory. Can you talk about putting new work on stage at the Alliance and what the Candida program does for new playwrights and for that world of new work?
Well, I think the Candida program is particularly special because it's drawing from this particular pool of playwrights, these young graduate student playwrights. And I think the opportunity that it gives them to have their first professional production, I hope, is an invaluable one. The process of putting up a new play is always, it can always be like kind of tricky waters to navigate, because it's not often until maybe the third week of rehearsal when a playwright has a chance to see the full play up on its feet with all of the lines memorized that they get a true sense of how their play is functioning in 3D. And this process has been, we've had some road bumps in this process. We lost an actor after a first week. We had a tremendous actress who's come in and replaced that actor. Despite that, though, it's been pretty smooth. And in part, that's because the Alliance, I feel, has taken such good care of us. They've just created a really incredible support system and a lot of resources, you know, at the end of the day, and time and space. I mean, really, in building a new play, that's what you need, time and space to experiment, to try out new lines, to try out new scenes.
Yeah. I mean, can you talk about what you're bringing to this story?
Okay. It feels like such a gift to be asked to direct this play because I am a white girl from Seattle, Washington, originally. And so it's a great question that I've asked myself, like, what place do I have in telling this story? And I can certainly draw upon my own experiences. I grew up very working class, and so I can draw some parallels, but I don't know what it is like to be inside the Black experience. I hope that what I've brought to this process is a deep sense of listening, a big heart, a rigorous investigation of the text, an investigation into the history of the piece, and permission for the time and space to explore these things. Dre, what do you think I brought to the process?
You said it all, actually. What has most benefited this process is your tenacious curiosity and your open-mindedness to say, hey, I don't really know much about this. Let me read every single thing. Let me map out Bosie's journey. Let me figure out where Sally might have done this or where Evelyn might have done that or where Tony did this. That I think sometimes when one is an inhabitant of their own narrative, they might have some assumptions.
Yeah. I mean, what has that process been like for you as a writer, that to have a team of people picking apart your work and putting it back together?
You know, I'm such a collaborative writer. Like, if I have 5 pages of a new play, I'm handing it to my roommate to say, read it out loud. I'm just, like, such a collaborative artist. And even the brainstorming of my process is about interviews and is about talking to people and about getting ideas and hearing the texture of the language, that once I have a whole play, it is so important to have artists who know what's in my head and know what is on the page and help me put a bridge between the two. And Margot has been excellent at that.
Dre, tell me about the title. I mean, it's a great title.
Is it a great title?
It is a really good title.
Why is it a great title?
I was thinking about this before we sat down, but Too Heavy for Your Pocket, it has this historic resonance to it, I feel. It sounds like a line from an ancient gospel song that, like, everybody's forgotten where it came from. It sounds great, like, being said out loud, Too Heavy for Your Pocket. Nice. Where did it come from?
I am pretty notoriously bad at titles. If I could,
I can see that.
But literally, if I could, they'd be 1, 2, 3, 4, and 6. I have a running list, and as I was brainstorming about this piece, I just visited my list of things that might be good titles, and I found this one. And that there's something that I like about the effort that it implies. The Too Heavy for Your Pocket implies you're grappling with it, implies that it's moving around with you, implies that whatever this too heavy thing is something that you're actively engaging. And so that's really what it's about. It's about the things that we carry around with us, be that struggle, be that ambition, be that gratitude, be that what have you, that is difficult for us, but that we carry it around anyway and we grapple with it.
Yeah. Jure, this being your first professional production, I mean, what do you take away from this experience going forward as you, you know, progress in your career?
I watched Moonlight again last night, and Terrell Evan McCraney was also a Candida winner. And something that strikes me about Moonlight is that it's heralded for its honesty, that there's not a lot of translating going on. There's not a lot of negotiating, people who might not understand, that it's an honest portrayal of an honest story, and that it's gotten 8 Oscar nominations. People can enjoy honest stories. And it is my hope that Too Heavy for Your Pocket is an honest story and people are enjoying it, and that we can do plays and movies and tell stories that are actually just honest and that don't have to have some, you know, or some, you know, some kind of way to let other people in, that if I just tell my truth, that maybe you'll see some value in that. And the Alliance has confirmed that for me.
That was Jure Holder and Margot Bordelon. the playwright and director of Too Heavy for Your Pocket. The show is on stage at the Alliance now and runs through February 26th.